Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Yes.
720 WGN. Lester Holt joins us right now. And Lester, the president is now in the East Room of the White House in front of law enforcement. And he's going after the press based on this New York Times, I'm assuming being started by this New York Times op-ed by one of his senior officials that said that they're trying to protect the nation from him. Can I just dip into a second here and let us all...
Yeah, I'm watching it here as you are as well.
Nobody has, and we have started the wall, nobody has ever done in less than a two-year period what we've done. So when you tell me about some anonymous source within the administration, probably who's failing and probably here for all the wrong reasons. Now, and the New York Times is failing. If I weren't here, I believe the New York Times probably wouldn't even exist. And someday... Let me just tell you. And someday when I'm not president, which hopefully will be in about 6.5 years from now... The New York Times and CNN and all of these phony media outlets will be out of business, folks. They'll be out of business because there'll be nothing to write and there'll be nothing of interest. So nobody has done what this administration has done. And I agree, it's different from an agenda, which is much different than ours. And it's certainly not your agenda, that I can tell you.
Thank you.
It's about open borders. It's about letting people flee into our country. It's about a disaster and crime for our country. So they don't like Donald Trump, and I don't like them because they're very dishonest people. Remember this also about the New York Times. When I won, they were forced to apologize to their subscribers. They wrote a letter of apology. It was the first time anybody's ever done it because they covered the election incorrectly. So if the failing New York Times has an anonymous editorial, can you believe it? Anonymous, meaning gutless, a gutless editorial. We're doing a great job. The poll numbers are through the roof. Our poll numbers are great. And guess what? Nobody is going to come close to beating me in 2020 because of what we've done. We've done more than anybody ever thought possible in, it's not even 2 years. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
That is the law enforcement officials in back of him who were there for a different event applauding him. Hmm. All in uniform. And I don't know if he's... Yes, he's walked away now from this. Okay. All right.
Well, wow.
Yeah. Now, let's just set this back up for people who just be joining us, may just be joining us. There is New York Times just pushed at about 3 o'clock this afternoon, Chicago time, an anonymous op-ed that is written by what New York Times says is a senior White House official, mm-hmm. in which they talk about the president being a danger to the United States, essentially, is what this is about. And that the person says that there are a number of people who are trying to protect the United States internally from this impetuous president and his whims. And then the president, now an hour and 20 minutes or so later, comes out at this other planned event and reads off a list of things that he has done, including low unemployment and jobs and the things that you know, have been talking points to the administration in terms of their policy successes. What is interesting about the New York Times piece, Lester, is that the New York Times piece acknowledges all those successes and says that the White House personnel are very proud of those successes, but those successes are despite the president's activities, not because of them.
Yeah, I mean, this is written. We were all trying to interpret what the overall intent of this was. Was it to say simply that, you know, don't worry, the grown-ups are in charge? But yeah, I mean, it written from the point of view that, you know, we're accomplishing things, but they're not because of the president, and describing his behavior as erratic and unpredictable. And interesting, in his comments just a few moments ago, he, of course, attacked the New York Times. You would expect he would. And he went back to that, something he said before, that the New York Times had apologized. They actually didn't. Several days after the election, they noted there were a lot of questions about whether there was, you know, it was an unpredictable election, you know, did we underestimate his support among voters, et cetera. And all they did was said, we're going to, you know, recommit ourselves, you know, to our reporting. There was nothing that suggested an apology. But nonetheless, he has gone on the attack when one might think this is something you need to reflect on and try to understand. Is there an active opposition in your White House. I don't think, no matter where you land politically, that's something you would think a commander-in-chief would want to know.
Well, it's fascinating because it appears that this was written by a conservative, you know, within the administration, talked about conservative values and the kinds of things that he or she would support, but that felt as if the president wasn't really committed to the ideals of the conservative party and that kind of thing. I thought that was interesting. The other thing, Lester, I want to ask you about is that the president did unleash a series of attacks just now, but also last week at the media, a common whipping boy for him, but he specifically singled out you and NBC when he said that this bizarre claim that you fudged the interview with him dealing with Russia. And to NBC's credit, you guys then released that entire 13-minute exchange that you had with the president, and it didn't really seem as if there was anything different you would draw from the 13-minute unedited version than the actual version that you showed on the air.
Yeah, this is nothing new. I can tell you, without going into great detail, he has raised it to me personally, and I've heard it from others in the White House that he continues to obsess on this. I didn't feel a need to respond because I think that most people were able to see with their own eyes and didn't need my commentary on it. But it does go to speak to the fact that that clip appears on the air a lot, and it based on the reaction, it appears to be unsettling. Whether it plays any role, in Mueller, we'll have to wait and see. But it's something that's clearly on his mind.
So it's the clip that he's concerned with, that when it's like in a promo or a tease or something?
No, I think it's the many news outlets, including ours, occasionally will run the part where he talks about, the Comey firing, and he was thinking about this Russia thing. I think it's, I can't speak for him, but my impression is he believes that somehow, it was part of a broader statement that wasn't as damaging as that is. But as I said, what he said speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm. It does.
All right. Well, it's a unique day. We were just talking earlier with Ben Bradley from Channel 9 about this, and kind of just thinking about in our institutional memory of being in this business, I've rarely seen this kind of a journalistic development, like we're seeing at the New York Times today.
No, I got to tell you, Ro, when I sat here and read it, I said out loud, I said, this is giving me the chills because of the, If it's true, if this is a senior government official, again, it really doesn't matter where you come down on policies or anything. This is the kind of thing you read in novels
right, or a Netflix series.
Yeah, I had to read some of the passages a couple of times. But the fact that New York Times knows who it is, and given, the New York Times, track record of credibility, notwithstanding the president's remarks, it has to give everyone pause. And you would think even the White House, even if they don't ultimately believe it, it would have to give you pause and make you look around you.
Well, it seems that the president, in just his words a few minutes ago, he's acknowledging that there is somebody there, and that this is a gutless person and somebody who's not doing a good job and who's failing, and the New York Times is failing. And he just goes out and starts punching wildly at the air in terms of going after people, because someone hit him from within his own house here, literally from within the White House. There's a senior official who wrote this 10-12 paragraph long op-ed in the New York Times that basically says that the president is because he is amoral. His amorality is he's not rooted in any philosophy. That amorality leads him to just do all kinds of crazy things.
Let's be honest here. I mean, you're in the commentary business. I'm a reporter ultimately, and I try not to offer my opinion too much. But the fact is, a lot of things that are raised in this letter, raised in the Woodward book, even raised in Omarosa's book, I mean, they fit a pattern of some things that we know. We have seen certainly erratic statements, contradictory statements. That's something we know to be true. So many of these things that have been written, we have to stand back and kind of look at them in the context of things that we have seen, and use that as somewhat of a guide to our judging the credibility of these things.
Right. Right. I mean, I think to your point, you were making that point just a few minutes ago about not feeling the need last week to come out and comment about what the president was saying about you, but to let your work and your words and his words speak for themselves and let people make their own decision.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's where it is. I mean, you know, I sat down and had that interview with him, and, you know, I asked him the questions I think every journalist would have asked, given the fact it was within days of the Comey firing, and he said what he said. I mean, it was a good exchange. You know, I'd leave it to others to interpret, but...
And that was 16 months ago, right? I mean, that's... So
well,
it's been
a while. I want to tell you, I was you know, on the West Coast, so I was kind of late to the game, woke up, and, you know, checking my Twitter feed, and I'm like, whoa, honey, the president's talking about
blowing up.
Yeah.
And still, 16 months later, people are talking about it.
Yeah, so it was a little surreal to kind of... in the middle of your vacation to read that, but, you know, everything's kind of surreal these days.
Yeah, it very much is. Now, this would be a top story were it not for all the things that are going on in Washington today, but an Emirates airliner landed, and there were 10 very, very sick passengers on board, and now they are asking to check the medical conditions of all the other passengers who are on board this plane. What do we know about that?
Well, it was, you know, it's this big double-decker A380, so it's a big plane, you know, can carry like 500 people, and, you know, the initial reports were 100 people sickened, and they moved the airplane or took it to an isolated area. It was met by health officials, ambulance, CDC investigating. I mean, it sounds like the symptoms, there were people describing people who got on the airplane that appeared to be sick, you know, hacking up and coughing, and some of those taken to the hospitals with fevers. There's no indication that it's anything... nefarious. The symptoms seem to be more flu-oriented, but they are trying to get to the bottom of it. You know, again, it's kind of one of those stories that Phillips playing right out of a thriller novel. But some of the passengers who were in other parts of the plane were allowed to go about their business. I don't know if you're familiar with these A380s. It's literally double-decker airplane. So you can be in the upper deck and have no idea what's going on below you, and vice versa.
That's where I like to sit on a plane, where I don't know what's going on anywhere else on the
upstairs.
Plane.
Upstairs?
Yeah, like, right?
Yeah, that's what I'd like. But unfortunately, I'm often in the middle seat, and I don't know how that really works out.
That's called zoned out class.
And we don't know.
I love that.
We don't know what's going on, though. At this point, the plane is still on the ground, and they're going through the passengers, right?
I believe some of the passengers were allowed to leave. Let me pull up the latest script here.
Yeah, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention examining people on board.
Yeah, they wanted to get to see if this was something, you know, that the plane had originated in Dubai, but as you know, Dubai is a huge hub for Emirates Airlines, and so, you know, people potentially coming from a lot of different places.
Those unaffected would be allowed to leave the plane.
Okay. And it landed at Kennedy. We should mention that this is at Kennedy International.
Right, and singer,
yeah, exactly.
Singer Vanilla Ice was on the tarmac at the same time and shot a video of everyone deep.
Yeah. Now, some of the passengers apparently were connecting from Mecca, and they have seen flu outbreaks in the past there, but...
Because the Hajj, right? I mean, this is the end of the Hajj season, I think, is it not?
Yeah, and the officials say, you know, they're concerned about, you know, different diseases spreading, and once they spread, people get on the airplane, they can take them internationally across the globe. I mean, that's always been, a worry, so you're seeing a lot of abundance of caution here, and these are the kind of things they train for, essentially. And in our age of jet travel, I mean, it's very easy to move these things across the globe in a short amount of time.
All right. Lester, we'll let you go. I know it's a busy day.
Yeah.
We'll see you on the NBC Nightly News in about an hour. Lester Holt, thank you, sir.
Thanks, Lester.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right. Let's check now with Judy. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Severe weather moving into the area.